Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, tea sippers. How are you out there in Blog Talk Radio land? You are dishing tea with Big Meech today, and I want to thank you all for joining me last week. Honey, I wasn't able to be on with you. You guys know I do have a regular 9 to 5 during the daytime, or actually it's whenever they say come in. And I wasn't able to join you last week because I had to take care of some things to make sure I secured a roof over my head. You know what I'm talking about, children. So with that, honey, today we're back, and we're going to give it to you the way it's given it to us, okay? We're going to be fabulously and fierce and not shady and cynical. You know how we are. Thank you again for coming in for today's show. I want to give my disclaimer up close and personal right now. This show is mature. It is heavily laden with adult language and grown folks' conversation. This is not intended for children, and today's show particularly is not intended for the workplace. So please have your earphones on or your headphones if you're listening. Because it's very, very graphic and very explicit, and this is not intended for anyone who is not mature enough to handle the topic for today. So your listening discretion is advised, okay? Let me say thank you to my sponsors that I have who support Dishing Tea. We have Trade Day Management and PR Services. At Trade Day, enjoy a touch of Southern hospitality with a universal appeal. You can contact Travion Davenport at 678-523-3088. Once again, 678-523-3088. Or you could email them at tradeaypr@gmail.com. That's TREADAYPR. @gmail.com, okay? Also, thank you and shouts to my other sponsor, Pharaoh's Treasure Box, Fine Art, Unique Jewelry, and 3D Floral Arrangements, Creations by Taps. You can contact them at 248-688-5179. Once again, 248-688-5179. Also, Parisian Wind Productions out of New York City, specializing in gospel house music and gospel house tracks. Paris Hairston is the CEO and executive director and music producer of all the tracks out there. He's in New York City. Parisian Wind Productions, I thank you so much for your time. You heard my opening music, that There Is Born This Way by Carl Bean, and I'm currently in the makings of getting my own opening song. So Parisian is going to be responsible for that. So listen out for that in the next couple of weeks. It should be ready, and I can have my own jingle. So thank you, Parisian Wind Productions. Also, we're going to go and say hello to C-Train Productions here in Atlanta, Georgia. C-Train is production. He's an actor, director, and producer of many film and television spots that are coming up within the very, very near future. C-Train, Omar Casserly, is the artistic director of that company. So thank you for C-Train Productions. Okay. Those are my sponsors right now. Hello over there to the tea room. If you're in the chat room, I'm saying hello to you. Feel free to bring in all of your comments and your questions. As we go forth through all of this, I want to make sure that I check back and forth. Now, I'm a one-man operation, so if I don't get to you, it doesn't mean I don't love you any less. It just means I'm flipping back and forth through screens, and so I'll get to you, and I want to say hey and shouts and all of those shenanigans, okay? So if you have questions throughout today's topic or throughout the show and you're in the chat room, you can post them there. Or you can call into the show at 347-205-9183. Again, 347-205-9183. That's the call-in number. When you call in, make sure you press the number 1, and I will know that you want to talk on my call switchboard here, and we can move forward with that. So I'll get your questions and comments in, and we'll make it a productive show, okay? Now, let's get to the meat. Today's show is very, very personal for me because this here has been about for my personal walk. So today is going to be a show that I'm going to be telling my business, y'all, and y'all going to learn a little bit more about me today than I think you really bargained for. However, because of the nature of the show, it is important that I share my story so that others can feel empowered to talk about it, to understand it, to embrace it, and then take the steps that they need to take to make recovery, if that is their choice, or to at least curtail or to modify the behaviors. So today's subject is all about sexual addiction. I call this show The Darker Side of Sex. A lot of us know, you know, we hear all the baby mama, baby daddy drama stories and things, and we think that there is the end all be all. But for many, many, many of us, sex is a weapon, and it is also an addiction. And in that ugliness, you know, it has taken us down roads that no one could imagine, and some worse than others, but nonetheless, that road that I call hell is very, very, very significant, and it's very real. A lot of folks don't believe that sexual addiction is real. However, I'm here to tell you that it is. Now, my guest today, he is affectionately known in some circles as Father John Jordan Zion. He's from New York City, currently living in Atlanta. He is an HIV and AIDS activist and counselor. He also works in this field of sexual addiction in his counselings. He has been on the advisory boards to many different LGBT organizations that specializes in youth and street outreach programs, and he also has been a part of the Fulton County Department, where he has been a liaison and works closely with those who deal with sexual addiction and the likings. Today, he was referred to me by Dr. David Melbrant, and when this came to me, I was taken back because I knew the name, and then when I found out that I knew this brother, I was very, very, very blessed that he was able to come onto the show. I would like to introduce to some and to bring forth to others. This is Mr. John Gabriel Ortiz. Hello there, John, baby. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Okay, a good evening. See, how you doing? That's Wendy Williams. So we're going to say good evening.
Uh-huh. How you doing?
good evening. So, but thank you for coming on to the show, darling. You know, I'm going to give them a brief history of us because you and I have history as far as being a part of Unity Fellowship Church movement. And while you were in New York and I was in Detroit, we were both joined and were doing some of the same things in those prospective cities. And that was outreach work. And I was doing transgender work, and you were also doing HIV work. And we were also discussing how we were kind of kindred spirits in the fact that we were experiencing some of the same things. And particularly with people of color, how this particular subject runs rampant in our world and in our populace, and also how LGBT persons of color seem to get the brunt of this, or what seems to be some kind of special label, if you will, that this is all that we know and that we do. Now, before I get into breaking this down, I want to share with the audience a blog that I had written under the same title. In fact, that's how I titled the show today. It was from this. I wrote this a few years ago because it was time for me to face some things. Now, as I said, I'm going to get very raw and very explicit. So, again, your listening discretion is advised. Also, I want to say this now, because as I tell my story, there's, of course, there were other people involved in it. Now, I will change names because I'm very close to some people. So I will change a few names here so that we can protect their anonymity. However, I have to tell the story the way that it is. So hopefully if they choose to call in and want to share the other side of their stories of how not only dealing with sexual addiction, but the person who is either the object of it or is the protector of it, of, you know, the caregiver or the caretaker, you know, we want to hear both sides of the story. So I'm putting that out there just in case, you know, folks listening want to share all of the stories, because we want to make sure that this is real for folks. So I'm going to read this, and then we're going to get into the topic. Once again, this is called The Darker Side of Sex. I've decided to share this blog with you because it is part of my healing and releasing. It is important that we all learn and understand that life's experiences are not to keep us from our potential, but to build us to be our potential. As you read this or hear this, I implore you to think about your own experiences and how you have or have not dealt with them, and to take this time to do something to heal yourself. I chose not to hide from this, and it was a part of me in some regards, and still is, as I go to help those who struggle with it. Many may feel as if I'm putting too much of my business in the streets. Well, my darling, I have nothing to hide anymore, and I will not let something that has no foundation in my life dictate my life. It's when we come from up under the covers, blankets, umbrellas, and out of the closets of shame and ridicule, will we as human beings understand that it took this experience to mold and shape me into who I am today. Yes, it was hell, pure, unadulterated hell, but just like Jesus did, I have conquered hell. And whenever I find myself in that space again, and I know that I have and still do get myself in these kinds of situations sometimes, I have to come to myself and recognize my power base and bring myself out of the situation, the hell that I've created. This is a raw, honest look at addiction from my experiences. No one under the age of consent shall read this without supervision. Please feel free to post a comment. I welcome all of your viewpoints. Oh, yes, Big Daddy. Fuck me. Don't stop fucking me, baby. Ooh, whose ass is this, nigga? Whose fucking ass is this? Take what you want, Daddy. Bang that motherfucking ass, nigga. Yeah, boy. Ooh, this some good dick. Ooh, shit, this some good dick. This my pussy, ain't it, bitch? Shoot that shit all over me, Daddy. Yeah, suck that dick real good. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. I'm about to bust. I'm about to come, baby. Take that cum, baby. Take all this cum. Yeah. brings back some memories of possibly getting you wondering if you can make a call right now, doesn't it? See, this is the side of sex that we adore, the fun side, the wild side, being with someone, whether they are a lover, a fuck buddy, or a cute piece you just picked up to add a notch to your belt, just for some sheer enjoyment of it all. To be able to share those stories with your closest friends or write in your journal. But there is a side to all of this that haunts many of us, and I'm one of them. You know, it is true. Sexual addiction is real. Many folks don't believe it exists. Folks feel that it's a playful way of saying a person wants to be a hoe, or they're really enjoying having sex with many different partners. I'm here to tell you that it is real. The uncontrollable urge to want to deeply penetrate someone, or to get plunged by someone, or that nagging feeling of needing to have a dick down your throat or some ass in your face for hours on end. Yeah, this may seem like a normal feeling, or someone is probably in dire straits because you have been without for a minute or two. But when it controls you, you cannot maintain your sense of self or your peace of mind is when it's problematic. Whenever you find yourself going above and beyond what you would do normally to have sex is when you realize something is wrong. Talking to yourself out of not using condoms when you normally would. Having sex with someone you know is HIV positive and not protect yourself. Going into the dark alleys, lurking around for anyone who is willing to go there with you. Walking aimlessly around the parks and in the hot spots looking for a piece when there is no one there. Lingering around for fear that if you leave, you might miss out on something. Fear of rejection from the one you want to knock boots with, causing you to settle for the one with nothing to offer but a bad experience. Chasing after the most intimate climax you've ever had and wanting the next person to duplicate that feeling. Or better yet, stalking the one with whom you had the fabulous experience with. Refusing to trust your first mind when you get that feeling to leave a person alone or remove yourself from the situation. But you go on and do it anyway, being caught up in the moment. For some of us, this is a real experience and an everyday battle. It's like a crackhead or an alcoholic who scrambles around for something or someone to give them a hit. You've seen many folks on the corners begging for money, knowing that you're supporting some form of habit, but with sexual addiction, the begging is done differently, unless someone has chosen the route of prostitution to get that monkey off their back. Most times, those of us who are going through an episode of wanting to become reckless, we tend to bask in stories of sexual adventures. We tend to set our sights on things we know are unattainable in order to give us an excuse to go out on and run rampant. We tend to set up arguments for no apparent reason, looking for an excuse. We set ourselves up for failure in order to have that woe is me or why did this happen to me feeling. And then we go out for the kill. Whether it is with one person or 1,000, we set out to squash the feelings of inadequacy, depression, loneliness, unworthiness, and all the other adjectives used to describe someone with a low self-image. We compromise integrity and our dignity in order to not experience whatever pain that may be emerging. Then, there's even a more darker side to all of this, the mental anguish one suffers. It's hard for those of us who deal with sexual addiction to overcome the feelings of jealousy and rage and envy and denial and rejection whenever someone we care about or wanted to be in a relationship with or courtship with is having fun-filled sexual experiences and it's not with us. Or better yet, it's not us. I truly believe that this is the hardest part of overcoming addiction. Sex, though it is a learned behavior, it becomes a need. Now, arguably, some of us will say that sex is a strong want, and in a lot of instances, that's true. But once the body has been awakened to these sensations, the body then requires the need for a release. And if it's not done manually, you go out and get some. Then the body will do it automatically. You end up having a wet dream. Now, for those who are in recovery, it's hard to have a monitor. It's hard to monitor your behavior in order not to go overboard into a reckless spiral, especially with something so intimate and personal as sex. whenever we are going through, it's hard to be completely happy for our friends and associates who are getting their groove on, and you can't or won't because of fear of relapsing. Jealousy kicks into high gear because the feeling is they can do something that I can't, or they just don't want to be bothered with me, so they just reach out to a complete stranger instead. And this is when the person that you're close to is the object of your desire. Envy is right behind jealousy because the feeling is it should have been me. And covetousness reigns supreme as we create a world of delusion and despair about something in it that has nothing to do with us. Rage follows directly behind that as we question, why isn't it me? And all of the fabricated answers only facilitate the feelings of despair and anguish. This puts my relationships with my friends in jeopardy. Those who are my best friends are those, and those, excuse me, those who are my best friends are there for the long haul. But it does wear on them, and sometimes they get to a point of wanting to break away from me. And once I got that feeling, that became a trigger, and triggers another bout of an episode of despair and anguish and abandonment. See, I thank God daily, hourly, secondly for my best friends because they have shown me unconditional love, and if they can get through this with me, we can do anything. Oh, yes, it's real. I try to control my demon, but not by not talking about it or eating huge amounts of chocolate, which is one of my telltale signs that I'm going through. I encourage all of you who read this to examine your behaviors closely and ask yourself if you fit any of the aforementioned characteristics. Mind you, this is not all of them. For more information, go to www.sarr.org or www.sexaddictionhelp.com. Let me know if you believe if what I have said is something that you think is real, or if it's just a figment of the imagination. I want to know how you think someone in my shoes should handle an episode once it is upon them or us or me. I look forward to your responses. Okay, that's what I wrote, maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago. And I still hold true to that today. Though I'm in a much better place now, I still use this as a teaching tool. So, Mr. John Ortiz, I'm throwing this in your court now. Let's start here. Let's start to break down the myths of sexual addiction. From your experiences and your expertise in it, let's define what it is.
Okay. Well, basically, when we're talking about addiction, especially sexual addiction, which you already have mentioned, can get very cloudy when you're trying to discuss it. But it is an uncontrolled behavior that we go through, that we go seeking out, so that we can fill those places of void in our lives. It also is our own continued reoccurrence of something in our sexual past. And for me, when I start to look at black gay men, and that's who I speak to on a general basis, is that many of us, when we are truly truthful with ourselves, will let everybody know that that we have been raped or molested as a child. And because we're raised in these households that say that we must be a man, and you know, and anything that is homosexual like makes you less than a man, then that's when we start to cover up our own secrets.
Okay. Okay, cute. Now, let's go there, because you say that you speak to the LGBT community, particularly African-American men or men of color and men who have sex with men, for the politically correct term. But addiction itself is not just limited to the LGBT community, but why do you feel that our community is always the ones who end up taking the hit for it? You know, we're the ones that's thrust in the public eye of saying that we're the sexual deviants, and et cetera, et cetera. Why do you feel that we hold that plight?
Well, I'm going to say this. I'm not going to talk about the whole sexual deviant and all that kind of negative talk, because to me, that's somebody's opinion and that's on them. They don't live my life, I don't live theirs. So we can talk about each other's life to that,
dig that
percent of accuracy. However, I will say this, that to every rumor, there is an ounce of truth. And so for us, and we have to look at the history of gay sex so that we can understand why we are at the point where sexual addiction is real high amongst particularly LGBT people of color. And it's that in the beginning, or how, if there was a beginning, but it come from a place of really strict on homophobia, whether it's from church, whether it's from the community. Being gay, being same gender loving, was wrong, period. And so people thinking that saying something is wrong is going to quell that which is natural to us.
Okay.
And so you have a lot of people that would turn around and say, well, you know, I know this is wrong. I just came out of church an hour ago, but I have to get this fixed. And we'll go to the parks. We'll go to different places to get that nut. Okay?
Okay,
and so
okay.
We learned how to have gay sex in the shadows, in hiding, in secrecy. We learned that in order for us to kind of even explore that little part of us, we had to become part of this secret society.
Okay.
So for
ooh,
us,
society. Okay.
There was not the bravado of a regular, you know, homeboy walking down the street and meets up with their homeboys and he's like, man, I got me some pussy last night. Damn, that shit was banging. That we were not afforded that chance. And so when we have sex with our cousins or our best friends, you know, there was nobody to go to and say, I just had the best dick. You know what I'm saying? Best piece
right,
of ass.
Right.
And so when we look at that in and of itself creates a nucleus of disempowerment. And so we continue doing this, and because you add to that then the curiosity of sex, which is a seed in all of our spirits. There is a curiosity about sex about, oh, what would that feel like? Okay, so we continue searching for that, searching for that, searching for that, searching for that, searching for that. And we start to build a pattern. Now, I need to stop right there. Because now that we understand how, you know, it developed itself, then we need to understand also who we are as a people, as black gay men, and again, I speak for black gay men, is
right.
That we weren't conditioned to sit down and talk. We weren't conditioned to explore our feelings. We weren't conditioned to tell the truth of ourselves. And so we are not exploring this within ourselves, this thing called gay or homosexual, same gender loving, whatever it is that you want to call it. We're not exploring this. Okay, but yet we have deep desires. So when you mix both of those things of the development and then the honesty of who you are as a being, in the exploration of that is where you start to develop your sexual addiction.
Interesting. Okay, that's interesting, interesting. Because I know for me, the whole coming out process for me was to promiscuity. And I'm wondering if, you know, our coming out process has to be reexamined. And I feel that it does. Because I know part of what it is for me was, you know, I realized this is who I am. And so then first out of the gate kind of thing was, okay, I'm free, I'm here, I'm there. And then you become the hot new piece of meat on the market when you first go to your first club, your first whatever, and you are the rave. You know, of course, I was young. I had a much smaller waistline then, you know, tall and statuous and this, that, and the other. And it was mesmerizing. But then I think what ended up happening for me was all the emphasis was on divide and conquer. Get as much dick in the ass as you can. And I know in my day, it was all about proving it. You know, because when we went to go tell our stories or whatever, I had to back it up, because if I got called out on the carpet, then, you know, I had to make sure that I was able to take these folks to my sources or to my hangout spots or to my this and to my that. And it was, that was part of the game. But then I let the game become a way of life for me because I couldn't control it. It was more so the need to, I wanted to be there and I wanted to do it, and I felt like, you know, I had to, because this is what gay was supposed to be. Gay is this. This is what gay is. This is what gay is. And I found myself into a lot of public restrooms and bathhouses and public parks, public libraries, you know, a lot of different public places where I read the graffiti on the walls. Okay, you want a good time, honey? This is the hot spot. And see, back in Detroit, it was, it was the city county building in Detroit. It was before Wayne State University started building. Every old building of Wayne State, if the walls can talk, they would scream my first middle and last name. Okay, because I'm serious, because that's what it was. It was following the you know, following what the folks said to go. So in this secret society, how is it that we ought to start learning how to recognize that it's a secret society, number one, and number two, when it becomes more than just, okay, I'm out having a good time? Because that's where a lot of people, I think, are blurred. Because, you know, we understand, you know, we like what we like and this, that, and the other. But when we talk about sex being uncontrollable and sex becoming a crutch for some people, how do we start to distinguish between good behavior or good sexual experience or just a natural sexual appetite versus a controlling, addictive style of an appetite?
First of all, because it's an uncontrolled behavior, then the only thing can be uncontrolled is to take control. So that's the first part, is to take control of your life and take control of your actions. Number two is that you need to walk into every situation with love. And I say that in the event is that, I mean, talking for myself, going to a public restroom and seeing, you know, the guys in there, and I would not talk to them, I would not say a word to them, but if one of them was cute, you know what I'm saying, I would do what I needed to do, bust my nut, and I'd walk away. And all that person was at that moment was an end to me, and that was it. I didn't see that person as a human being, and I did not see into his spirit. And so what I say is that once I learned that and I was able to walk into a room and see somebody who was attractive but be able to say hi, you know what I'm saying, or bust that, and then be able to say a sentence afterwards to invite conversation, that's where it became different for me. But we continue to go into it just because this is what I want to do. I just got to bust this nut. Okay, when we stop to address that there's a different need that we are trying to fulfill, then that's always going to be an uncontrolled behavior in a bathroom, looking for that cute, you know, that cute guy.
Okay.
To finish the second part about that is that how to distinguish between good and bad sex, you know what I'm saying, or harmful sex, is that that once you know who you are and what it is that you like, see, I happen to like a certain kind of sex,
mm-hmm.
okay? And I can't allow society to tell me that that kind of sex that I like is bad. So once I come to terms with that, then it's about, okay, I'm going into this because this is the shit that I like. You know what I'm saying? It's what I like. But let me see, am I doing this in a harmful way by not putting on a condom, by, just stalking somebody. You know, all those different things that we do that might be unhealthy for us, if we start to address that, then we can have the concepts that we like, but just not in the manner that's harmful to us or to anybody around us.
Okay. All right. Now, you said something that became a blanket term, and that was, we have to understand that love is the key. And that becomes such a blanket term, and it has become such a cliche now. But let's break that down a little bit, because in this, a lot of folks are looking for, some folks are looking for love, others are looking for acceptance, others are looking for whatever. How does that particular term of love not be so generic and not be so cliched and not be so, not become a church word or a hot button? Because a lot of folks hear it but don't know how to make that transition into it.
Okay, well, and because of that, it's always going to be a cliche, something that you hear, until you experience it for yourself. And that takes, in order for you to experience it, you have to take that risk, okay? And I just tied this into the whole discussion today. The other day I was online, and my godbrother, whom I live with, saw me on Adam for Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, well, aren't you talking to somebody? And I said, well, kind of, sort of. And I said, why are you still searching? I said, who said I'm searching? He said, well, you're on Adam for Adam. I said, I'm talking to my friends. He said, you actually like talking online? And I said, yeah. He's like, I don't have the patience for that. And I turned around and I told him, and that's why you have the life that you have. And I wasn't trying to be shady, but my thing is that if you go into a situation believing all and staying in all the negative of it, then that's what it's going to become, a negative situation, a negative experience for you. But when you can actually change and take that risk to go in there in love, meaning that I'm going to see the good in this situation, then that's when your experiences shift, and that's when it becomes healthier for you. Are you getting it? If I can go into a sex site and just want to have a conversation with a couple of my buddies that I've known, then I had a good experience. But if I go in there and see just this sex site as just a sex site, then it's going to be what it's going to be. You get the difference?
Okay. I got where you at, because I'm there now. Because, see, I go to Bear 411 in Bigger City. Adam for Adam, I would hit that from time to time, but they're not real good with big boys, and that's a whole nother story. But the whole thing is this. I'm there at that point where I can say, okay, this here is a enjoyable experience for me because I have my control factors in. I know how... I know what is healthy versus what is unhealthy for me. But let's discuss those who are still in that, who still feel that the cruising is necessary. Because we are in the day and age where now, we're fighting for a lot of gay marriages to become legalized and everything. And it's these kinds of behaviors that a lot of society sees us as and deems the LGBT community as these recluse, deviants or whatever, and not understanding that a lot of us suffer from addiction because we substitute sex for love and looking for love and wanting to love and this, that, and the other. How do we address those needs of those who are still, who are still caught up in the whole idea of what addiction is?
That's why I say you have to take that risk. You have to take that leap. Nobody, we can't offer the magic pill to anybody. It has to come from within, as I'm sure that you know. It has to come from within. You have to want to make the change for yourself. And so what we can do is we can have these discussions and put out the information out there. Because, you see, when I was acting out, all this did not exist. You know what I'm saying? We were not talking about this. So to me, as long as I operated in that invisibility, in those shadows, then I continue to want to behave that way. But once I understood that there was conversations like these happening, once I got more information, then it became my choice. Do I choose to take this risk or this leap or not? And so that's why I tell people, I mean, I understand that it's real hard to get out of it, but the only thing that we can offer you is this discussion, is this level of honesty, so that you can make your personal choice.
Okay, so we go back to personal choice and personal decisions in it. Okay, let me go here, because for me and callers and listeners, I'm telling y'all, this here is very personal for me. So I'm going to be sharing a lot of my experiences in this, because I'm almost 40, so I would say at least 20 of those years, maybe even 22 years of that time, I have had a battle with this, because in the beginning it was very cute. Like I said, when I first came out, it was this, and you know, I was the hot shit on the block, and Lord, you know, USDA choice, and you know, baby, this is real, honey. You know, you ain't never had none like this, and blase spleen. But then when I became old, you know, when you know how you go to the meat shop and the meat don't look all that cute and red no more, it start to, you know, it's been there a few days and all of that, and or you done been through all the best cuts of meat, and and you know, when you're on that proverbial meat rag, honey, you know, then things start to change. But as I started gaining weight, and you know, I felt that folks were not taking me seriously, and then folks didn't want to partner with me. So I was good enough to have sex with, but nobody wanted to partner with me. You know, that there was forging my way into existence. So I thought, okay, this is all just about, you know, just going out, you know, being a man, you know, men gonna be men. And since I'm having sex with men, hell, okay, you know, this should be rather easy. However, it became harder, because in my wanting more out of life and wanting more than just sex, I didn't know how to verbalize that, or at least stand my ground on it. So I would say one thing, but my actions would say another, and then folks were not taking me seriously, and then it would start this whole big old cycle, because if I wasn't taken seriously here, then that means this. So that means I have to do this. And it started this whole complete cycle for me. And so I found myself where I had got up to having sex with 5 guys at a time. Because, you know, it was the new thing, you know, it was the height. It was like the more I was into it, nothing could satisfy me until I was able to top it. You know, top the last experience, or top the next experience or whatever, or you know, bring in that force of excitement for me. Because what I was doing up until that, until the new thing, was starting to bore me. You know what I'm saying? And so it became powerful. I wasn't one of the beautiful ones, you know. So in this particular arena, my power became the object of choice. See, I was able to go up in there and say, you know, yes, I'll have sex with you, or no, you're not worth my time, you know, and I could turn folks away. And I was, you know, I can feel like, you know, how I felt shunned at the clubs or at the meeting post or whatever. When I was when I was looking for somebody of decency and quality or whatever, and they turned their nose up at me. So in this particular arena, I became the bitch, you know, or the, you know, the beautiful ones. And so I got addicted to the power in it, because then I was able to use sex as a weapon and as a power. When I have folks fighting over me, who could suck my dick first? That, oh my God, baby, when that happened at the Fisher Theater, the Fisher Building in the basement bathroom, baby, it was two children fighting, pushing and shoving each other at who could get at me first. Baby, I was at my Mecca then. Okay, I was at my Mecca, and nobody could tell me nothing otherwise, because I was like, okay, motherfuckers are loving me, you know, and I felt I was hot shit, and I couldn't, you know, nobody could touch me, and this, that, and the other, but it was all made up in my head because of the situation. And for a lot of folks out there going through all of this, this is where it becomes real. Because you get addicted to the power. You get addicted to what that represents. It's kind of like the ball circuit. Because as long as you walk in the balls or whatever, a bitch got status. But when you get into regular world and regular reality, you know, whoever ain't a part of that ball scene don't give a fuck about that. And same with addiction. As long as I'm not into that realm, it was okay. Because like my friends, you know, please, come on, you know, you with your good Judy's or whatever, and you want to sit down and do what friends do. Okay, we're going to do this together. You know, I brought a boy home or whatever. Come on, child, come do this with me, this, that, and the other, because, you know, you want your best friend in. But all of my friends, I don't know how in God's name I would be the one to do this, but I never had friends who would want to go take that journey with me. You know, I was all, oh, child, I can't do this with you, honey, because this, 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 and this. You mean you a brother to me, you are this and you are that. And that would upset me, you know, because I wanted to have fun without going to my other places or whatever. You know, I wanted to bring in the folk. And so that started a spiral for me. And I learned what my trigger factors were that take me out there, because like I said in the blog, I would start arguments, you know, when I was still living at home with my mother. I would, you know, shit would happen, and I would start an argument on purpose, you know, because I knew I wanted to go out. I talked myself out of it, but needed an excuse to say, okay, I'm mad and I'm pissed, and I would just leave and storm out and, you know, give all the histrionics behind it, honey, and all the flair of saying, fuck it, I'm gone. And then would be caught up for like 6 or 7 hours, you know, somewhere dead, ain't nobody there, but I'm scared to leave because I'm scared I'm going to miss something. And that was when I knew I couldn't control it anymore, because it wasn't just the nut anymore. It was more so, okay, it was chasing it because it was like a high. And God, when I had, you know, somebody who was really cute and took me there and was able to hit it, and it was just, you know, the light's fantastic. Then I was chasing the light's fantastic because the next person got to do it like that. You know, oh, my God. You know, because that was fabulous. And, oh, my God. And, you know, we have to do that one more time. And then in my search for that, then you get mediocre. You know, I'm like, oh, that wasn't it. Okay, I got to do this again. Then next thing I know, it's 5 or 6 hours later. Now, mind you, I'm still in high school at this point, so I had to hurry up and get home, you know, come up with excuses with my mother why I'm out so late. And I was on the debate team, so I constantly had to do research at the library and carry notes for the topic. So that was my excuse. Oh, I had research or whatever. And that there was me, you know, making excuses for it and this, that, and the other. So I shared all that at this point because I know it, for those of us who have gone through it, a lot of us, you know, still do not understand how it can be so addicting. And I want to make that point particularly clear. But I got a couple of callers here. Let's go in here, and I'm going to go here first. 770-865, 770-865. Come on in, honey. You're dishing your tea with me. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
What's going on?
Oh, hey, baby. What's up?
I had to dish the tea with you today.
Oh, well, come on and dish your tea with us, honey. We got something going on. So I want folks to really, you know, have your peace with it, honey. So bring what you got, honey. Give it to us.
You know, me and you have discussed this on personal calls, but I feel that we as a black people first, have denied, covered up, kept in the closet who we were, being afraid of who we are, and we've hid it for so long. And we take this time, and when we go forth and we have sex, and oh God, we it's such what's the word I'm looking for? A taboo for us when we got started, and it felt so different, and you liked it, but you didn't know what to do with it, and we took off.
Uh-huh.
We got to the point to where we were young, and we didn't have no one to say, baby, don't do that, or calm it down a little bit. You're running the street too hard. We got to the point when you were just a fresh chicken, an 18-year-old out at the bookstore.
Okay.
8 hours a day, full shift.
Right.
You know, you and your good girlfriend in there saying, "Well, who can get the most dicks today? Well, who can?" Do
okay.
The most
right. Dicks right.
Today?
Right.
You know, not knowing what we really could have got ourselves into if God wasn't with us then to make it to where we still here now, but we didn't have. No, first of all, we couldn't be out to go to anybody, and there was no one out to go to say, hey, you don't want to do all of that.
Right.
So we've gotten in the repetition of, and now in our own society as gay people in general, we're labeled that way because most of the time, that's what you see. You go into certain clubs here in the Atlanta area, you hit the back room on a certain night, and you got Sodom and Gomorrah.
Woo! Did you say Sodom and you ain't going okay.
You can go to certain clubs here in Atlanta, in the state of Georgia, down by Augusta, by the way.
I'm gonna tell
my own testimony. I was laying in that place one night, and I don't know if it was my spirit, but I wanted to burn the whole place down because it was felt like it was just sex with no meaning.
Right.
You know.
That's it, right there, with no meaning attached.
It's just sex. That's all it is. It's just sex. Oh, I wanna do him. Do you know anything about him?
Mm-hmm.
What is it about him besides his physical features to make you say you want to just go and lick on him, suck on him, stick your parts in him, body fluids
right.
Are exchanged?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have friends that had the sexual addiction that we're speaking of today. Now they on medication every day. And I don't have to say what for. We all know what it is. Because they had that sexual addiction to want to have 4 and 5 bars over on their day off.
You
got so bad to where if you knew you had you a schedule full of bars coming over, you wouldn't even put no food in your body so you could stay clean the whole time.
Okay, now see, here you go. Starvation. Okay.
Right, for sex. So it was just as bad as a person being on cocaine, crack, marijuana, Heron, Ecstasy, Miss Tina. You let us know who you are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Because I have experienced what I've experienced with, and I know one of them, Miss Tina, will take you to a place that you have never thought you had been before.
Okay.
You
mm-hmm.
were turned into that lady of the night that you didn't know you could be. You didn't know
right,
you could
exactly.
be that right. You didn't know you could be that down and dirty and nasty. You didn't know that you could go so far as to have bars in the bathroom at the club. Doing
See?
All sorts of things.
In the bathroom, at the club. In, shut up, fool, because I've been
the
there, too.
In the nastiest place there is to do it at.
Right.
You
right.
You put your knee on the floor because you're scared what you might come up with.
What you might come up with. Hello.
You
Hello.
Know.
Hello. Hello. Been there. Done that. Mm. See, this is the realness of it, and this is kind of why I call it the darker side of sex, because these particular stories no one hears. Or... You know, for those who are, I'm going to say this, for those who only see the LGBT community in that particular light, and I'm not, I say it like that because we don't hear those stories from our straight counterparts,
but
although we know it's there, because, you know, like I said, with the baby mama, baby daddy dramas and carrying on, and, you know, that whole pimp, hustler, baller mentality that goes on with our heterosexual counterparts,
mm-hmm.
You know, it exists, and that's the ugliness in it. And a lot of us get caught up in not knowing that that's what we're caught up about. See, the term nymphomaniac, you know, was a term used for somebody who it was supposedly someone who likes to have sex all the time.
Right.
However, you know, I really don't believe that term exists anymore, because what has become healthy sexual behavior and appetite. You know, it's one thing to say I'm living a single life and you're getting your groove on. You know, you're feeling your thug theories, you know, your thug theory and this, that, and the other.
Right.
But it's another thing when you cannot control it. It controls you. Your waking moment is, I got to get some dick. I got to get some ass. Or, in for lack of a better term, because we all call it the same thing, I got to get some pussy. So,
right.
You know, when we get to that particular point to where your every thought, your every command, your everything that you do revolves around how you getting your next piece, and then you done thought, it's just like planning your dinner, when you get up in the morning and you done set up there and got your breakfast, lunch, and dinner menu together,
you're
same way,
up.
If you doing that for sex, okay, I'm going to call so-and-so and so-and-so and lining it up,
mm-hmm.
there, you know, we have lost the power in it, or we have succumbed to what the power of addiction, of sexual addiction does to us. And that there is what I'm speaking on today, that is very passionate for me, because I lived it. I've lived it. I've been there, and I'm so thankful to say that the physical aspects of it,
mm-hmm.
I have become so much more in control of, because I know my trigger factors physically. You know, I don't go out and act out and this, that, and the other. However, there's another side of this that I'm gonna get to in just a second. But yes, so Colin.
Uh-huh.
I thank you for sharing, and thank you for dishing your tea with us, honey. I'm going to put you back down here because I got a couple more callers coming in, and I want to make sure that everybody gets heard. So keep listening, and I'm going to put you back up. I'm going to put you back down. So if you got something else to say, chime back on in, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks, sugar.
Oh.
All right, it's one of my tea sippers right there. We gonna John, you still there, baby? You want to comment on that?
I'm here, but yes. I think that we need to watch out for what I call is hypersensitivity in being gay. When you were sharing, you said about that we don't hear too much from the straight community, but we do.
Mm-hmm.
We do, and we hear it so much that it becomes a norm. So when we hear about
a guy who goes
to the bar, you know, and then right on his way home, he stops by the titty bar to get his dick sucked or to put some dollars in a G-string, then we don't think nothing of it because, hey, that's what guys do. You know what I'm saying?
But
you
got a point there.
Okay, when we talk about how porn is the number one money making business on the internet, we don't think nothing of it because it's just porn. It just becomes so normal to hear about, and yet we don't even address it because that's just what you know straight men do and straight women do. But when it becomes something about gay, all of a sudden it becomes this huger than life issue that nobody else is talking about except us, among us.
Interesting.
But
and you're right. You know what? You are absolutely right on that.
So
yes.
Because it does exist. It does exist amongst straight men and straight women. I mean, the fact that most men marry late on in life because in the beginning of life, you know, they're thrust into, I'm not going to trust any females, I'm going to get as much pussy as I can, we get together with our homeboys, we run trains on females, all that happens as a norm, and that's just what guys do.
Okay. All right, we're going to take another caller. I'm coming here to 423-635, 423-635. Hello, caller, you're on the air, dish your tea, baby.
Good afternoon, how are you doing?
Hey, hey, what's up?
Well, you know,
this is a
good topic, but you know, I got comments and questions. I'm gonna start with the question first. The question I have for your guest is that, and there was a slight part in there where I got disconnected and I didn't hear a few things, but am I correct in understanding that you're saying that the sexual addiction itself is not an addiction, it is something that is controllable by choice?
No.
Or did I
misunderstand? Yeah, misunderstood. I'm saying that it's an uncontrolled behavior. That's what makes an addiction. And we were discussing was, how do you then change the tables on that? And I said that the thing about uncontrol, what beats uncontrol is taking control.
Okay, I got you. Okay. And then the comment I wanted to make is that you said that the name of this, the name of the topic of the show was The Darker Side of Sex, and I have heard, and not that it's not valid and relevant, it is, that, you know, what the harm is to you, but there's a harm, I think, that's done to other people as well. Like you said, you have friends, family members, people that you have hurt in your actions that were uncontrollable. You know, I think that there's part of that is an underlying current, because you can be, I think there's a big difference between being promiscuous, being a nymphomaniac, and being a sex addict. And, you know, I can be all three at once, but I think you can be each of those things separately as well. Now, I mean, because when I came out, you know, just like everybody else, you know, I it was something new. It was exciting and enticing, and you know, one of the things about I think that's so appealing to men in the gay community is that sex is easy between us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can say that, you know, we can get online or we can get on a phone line or whatever, and, you know, 20 minutes later, we're somewhere getting our dick sucked or fucking or whatever it is you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But in that vein, I don't think that, you know, even to the point where, because, I mean, I've been at a point where I did, you know, 3-4 guys in one day, and, you know, but I never felt that it was uncontrollable. And I never felt that I had to run over someone else to get to what I wanted. I think it's very important that we acknowledge the fact that, yeah, you can be promiscuous and not necessarily be a sex addict, but you can be promiscuous and be a sex addict.
Yeah, I want to say that in the beginning I was talking about that, about once we get in touch with what it is that we like and we understand this is what I like, and just because this is what I'm doing is not created a negative effect on my life or anybody else, then it's what we like. But what you're speaking about is that once it starts to become, you know, a negative effect on anybody's life, that's when it becomes uncontrolled and when we need to take a look at that. You know? But just because I like threesomes doesn't make me an addict. You know what I'm saying? Just like just because I like going to a bath doesn't make me an addict.
Right.
When I stop paying my rent because I have to go to these places, that's when it becomes an issue. Or when I start to lie to that boyfriend that I just met because I want to go and fuck in the park all night long, that's when it becomes something to look at.
Right. Or, you know, or when, exactly, because then that's when, like I said, and just from my own experience of dealing with sex addicts, both in the gay community and in the straight community, there wasn't much of a difference, except in the gay community, the focus was me, and in the straight community, I saw, you know, brother just, you know, totally destroy himself because he had to have a prostitute every night. And, you know, spend him and his wife's, you know, life savings.
Wow.
I mean, I think it's just as prevalent in the straight community because, to be honest, I've seen documentaries and television shows and 2020 and Nightline, and every time they talk about sexual addiction, they talk about it from the point, from the straight community. You know, and that's something else. I think the gay community, and especially the gay black community, gets overlooked when it comes to these kind of things. Just like, you know, for that matter, like you were saying earlier, there are, or the other caller was saying, there are, you know, crackheads out there, and the government really doesn't care about addressing the issue of crack cocaine. You know, they don't really care about addressing the issue of crystal meth in the black community, but you talk about crystal meth in the suburbs, and they got task forces and dragnets and SWAT teams.
Right.
You know. So I think it gets overlooked a great deal. From the standpoint of the gay and the black gay community. So that's all I wanted to say, and I love your show today.
All right. Well, thank you, baby. I'm going to put you back down. If you got anything else, chime on in.
All right.
Thanks, caller. You know, he brings up a point there because when the person is the object of the addictive person's desire, that there reeks about havoc. And I know I've been there, wasn't trying to. However, it ended up happening because each time, it's happened on more than one occasion, and each time it was because I was very close to the people. And in my wanting to reach out and partner, and in my wanting to, I guess, be loved, actually, I wanted to bring something into, bring the whole physicality of sex into the play, because in my mind, hell, what we had was the relationship without the fucking, you know? And I felt that it was supposed to be the next best thing because, like I said before, you know, when you're coming from in places where low self-image is the thing, you know, and is at the helm, then what ends up happening is, for in my particular case, I reached out to those who were already closest to me because they knew all about me. You know, for the most part, you know, they accepted who I was and who I am. You know, there was no hiding this. They was able to put up with all my damn snoring. I cooked for them. And, you know, it was all of those things. And then here's the kicker. Now, I'm so everything. Oh, you are just everything that I've always wanted in the person. You know, and then here comes that comma but. But you like a brother to me. You like a uncle to me. You like a mother to me. You like a, you know, then you get that whole family member aspect. And I know for me, that was becoming a broken record. I swear, I was like, okay, if somebody say that one more damn time, I'm literally going to take their tongue and snatch it out and tie it in a knot. Because I just got very tired of hearing that. You know, and it made no sense to me because I'm like, well, hell, if I'm all of this, what the fuck make you go to a stranger? You know, and that is the mental anguish that addiction does, because once I was able to capture the and put a handle on the physical aspects of it, it was the mental aspect that started to challenge me. Because I wasn't able to separate my altered reality from real reality. You know what I'm saying? I would create a fantasy world of what life is supposed to be, or what I think it is supposed to be for me, or how it ought to be, or how I want it to be. And then I would let that image end up dictating how I interact with everyone else, particularly the objects of the desire. I'm going to share this because it happened, it's real, and at one point I was embarrassed to talk about this. In fact, I didn't even tell this person until months later after it happened. But at the time, you know, what I love about sex is that I'm an exhibitionist and I'm a voyeurism and I'm a voyeuristic. And my friend, you know, we would sit down and at one point in time we would have locker room talk and this, that, and the other. So he would tell me stories about, you know, his particular experiences and, oh, he was with this friend and that friend and, you know, how it became an orgy here or a three-way there and this, that, and the other. And those were just friends. But now you done gave me the title, you know, of the special friend. I'm the best friend. I'm the better friend. I'm the good friend, you know, the one that infiltrated the structure. And I'm down to the nucleus and the core. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, cool, you know, because my definition of that is, okay, bitch, we share everything, you know, within reason. Now, you keep your boundaries or whatever, but we talk about those things because that's what we do. You know, we Judy's, we talk, everything, no holds barred. You know, okay, if you ain't ready to talk about it now, I know you're going to give me the dirt later, you know. So I wait, and this, that, and the other. Well, as my addiction was taking a new form, particularly because I had started that cycle of I was attracted to him and he wasn't attracted to me in that same fervor. You know, I'm a brother, you know, motherfucker, come on, you're my brother. What we gonna do? I couldn't hear that because my whole thing was, what do you mean? You know, because how we met on a sex line. It was a phone line, actually. And we ended up talking and developed a wonderful friendship. And it was cool. Everything was cool. Until he sent me a picture of his dick. When he did that, everything in me changed because I then got into a point of, how come everybody else can get this, but I can't? What the fuck is you saying to me? You know, bitches you don't care about, bitches that don't mean nothing to you, they're just, you know, they're nothing. They're insignificant. You tell me I'm everything, but I can't have that. And it was the rejection of hearing, because I'm having a flashback. Excuse me, y'all. I told y'all this is very personal.
Bring it back, Molly. Bring it back.
Okay. I haven't talked about that in a little minute. But it was in that I wasn't able to hear what, you know, what the relationship was and still is today. And that is a very good friendship. And I keep telling myself, you know, I welcome friendships. I welcome them because everybody's not attracted to everybody, you know, on the romantic tip. But friendships, I welcome that all the time. But here, I wanted more because I felt like I couldn't get it. And then the challenge was, how in the hell do I make him give it to me? You know what I'm saying? So I'm competing with the Demetrius of 17, because at 17, if you know, there was nothing that I didn't have that I didn't want it. If I put my mind to it, every man that I wanted, I had. So, you know, at, what was I then? 34, 35, whatever it was. You know, I'm competing with that 17-year-old in me that says, bitch, go for it, bitch, go for it. And knowing that was the addiction talking, I was talking it down. I was like, no, you know, I'm cool. But every time he would, because we lived in close proximity, in fact, right across the hall from one another. So every time he would bring company over, baby, you talking about a bitch, I can feel the steam come off my neck because I'm like, they don't give a fuck about you. What the hell is it? You know? And I would then set myself up to go out, you know, every time he had company. And it did make it, oh, Lord, I'm okay. It what made matters worse is that because of how close we were, we had keys to each other's place. So, you know, I was cooking and carrying on, and he was, you know, bedridden for a little minute, dealing with the colds and blah, blah, blah. So I would always cook, and, you know, I just go over, hey, you know, Bologna Woods, child, just go on, you know, go on in and carry on. Well, because we boys, you know, we down, we had set up, I told him, you know, hell, I like listening, you know, because the rule of my house at that time was, you fuck in my house, I'm listening. If you play like I play, I'm at least watching, you know. And though he wasn't in my house, you know, I told him that. And we got to talking about that and this, that, and the other. He said something to me that threw me, and that was, well, I don't want to feel like I'm performing for you or this, that, and the other, because that ain't my thing. And I said, what the fuck you mean that ain't your thing? But you go to, you've been to sex parties. You've been in, you know, the group thing. What the fuck you mean that ain't your thing? And you sitting around there, there's 50 damn people up in here looking at your ass, you know. And it was, I thought it was just a cover for him to say that he didn't want to be bothered. You know, he wasn't in that thing with me. But then he conceded and said, long as I don't know that you're there, I'm fine, because I don't want to feel like I'm on the stage. Well, the addictive personality kicked in. And as long as he didn't know I was there, I felt I was cool. And so I've been over listening to him fuck on more occasions than he knows. Okay. And to the point to where we had a riff about it because he blatantly lied to me. And I was wanting to get around it without telling him I was in the house. But he blatantly lied to me. He know I don't tolerate. I don't care. Just don't lie to me. And we had a riff. And that particular night we had a riff, I went out. Because he threw me out the house and this, that, and that. I mean, we had a moment. And I slammed the door because I needed an excuse. That was my excuse. He never seen me like that. Never seen me like that. And when I left, I left. I didn't give a fuck. He tried to call me on my phone. I hung up on him because, fuck, what? What? You don't, you ain't worried about my ass. You just got through fucking. So deal with the ass and the dick you just got. Don't worry about me. You know, and that's what I told him. And I hung up the phone and called it Grace. He ended up having to come and pick me up because the goddamn bus was stopped running and I couldn't get back home. But I'm saying all that to say that the mental anguish behind it, a lot of us get caught up in it because we don't know how to handle it. We don't know how to handle the rejection. We don't know how to handle not being desired because the folks there may desire you on one end, you know, to be a friend because all friendships are based on some kind of attraction. Your friends are your friends because in some point or another, you're attracted to them in some kind of way. Either they're intelligent or you like their style or whatever. And usually that attraction doesn't transform into a romantic attraction. It's just, you know, the natural attractions that we all take. So in all of that, I was able to sit down and we talked, and that was the very, very first time that he's actually seen me in that particular light. And then, you know, there were some more things that came later where I found myself in some kind of prison situation because I was a spy, basically. And I had my conscience wouldn't let me deal with that. But because of how the apartments were, whenever he had company come over, I did this like maybe six times. Whenever he had company come over, and I would wait until I knew that they were enthralled. So I knew how to get into his room from the connecting bathroom. And just like you saw in prisons with the mirrors, how prisoners take their mirrors and cock the mirror to an angle and look to see what's going on. That's a beautiful analogy because that's exactly what I did. And it was a complete invasion of his privacy, of a betrayal of his trust. I couldn't stop myself. And I tried, God, I tried, oh, my God. I would sit down, I stripped down naked because we wouldn't go through the house naked with one another. You know, we always put your clothes on or whatever. And so I had stripped naked. I got up under my bed. I was crying. I was rocking. I had knots in my stomach, but I could not shake it. I couldn't. God, I even left the house. I started doing laundry. I went downstairs and said, fuck it, let me do laundry. And I couldn't shake it because it was eating me. So I ended up, you know, with my little mirrors and carrying on. And up until I guess I felt I was ready to let it, you know, it passed or whatever, I was ready. I shook it. And for the longest time, he never knew that I did that. He never knew I did that. And we were making a major decision, and I had to sit him down, and I said, I can't do this anymore. And he says to me, he says, well, what's the matter? And I said, I need to talk with you. And I don't know what he thought. I kind of think that he might have thought that I was about to tell him that I was HIV positive. Because that was the feeling that I got. Because I kept saying, I don't know how to say this. I don't know how to say this. And I was crying. And we had a bottle of wine. I said, here, join me for a drink because I don't know how to say this. And every time I was about to say it, I got stammered and I couldn't tell him. And when I finally told him, it was the look in his face that killed me. Just completely destroyed me. Because, you know, for everyone who knows the sweet, wonderful, adorable Demetrius, oh, you are so funny, you are so this, you are so that. And I tell folks, I said, no, there's a dark side, sugar, that a lot that I keep hitting from folks because I don't like it. And when I told him that and his reaction to me from that point, I really thought our friendship was broken. And in a lot of regards, it was. To be honest, I really don't think that we've completely recovered from that. We have distance between us now, so I think that is what helped us to keep what we have and has actually got us stronger. But that particular kind of betrayal, even though we can blame it on addiction, you know, that's just like a crackhead when they sit up there and had somebody killed in the family for some drugs. You know, yeah, I understand that's addiction, but, bitch, you still did this. You know what I mean? And so because of that, building up that trust again to that particular level, I don't know if it'll ever get there. No, that's not necessarily true. I think it's there. We just have distance between us now that keeps everything at bay because I'm not all in this business. And, okay, I'm going to get on that in a minute. I'm not all in this business, you know. He's able to be selective with me when we talk on the phone to tell me what he want to tell me versus me being nagging because you ain't told me this or you ain't told me that. I still get flare-ups here and there because, shit, we supposed to be boys. What the fuck am I doing waiting? You know, bitch, this done happened 4 months ago and you just now telling me? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I have to lie in that bed because I made it. You know what I mean? And that's a harsh reality to deal with, but that's part of the repercussions behind what addiction does. And it's a very, very hard, bitter pill to swallow, but it's real. It's very real, very, very real. Another person, I've had to cut him out of my life because oh, God, when I actually saw him for the real person that he was, it became nasty to me because I don't believe that, you know, I was actually falling for him or whatever the case may be. And it was just nasty. And I felt like I could never whitewash my soul because it was dirty to the core. And I felt like I could never recover from that. So I cut that person out of my life. Another person, you know, has been there, you know, through all the ups and downs and carrying on and has been there to mold and to help shape me and have seen my patterns and call me out on my shit, you know, and be like, okay, bitch, you overstepping. I'm like, no. When I think I got a hold on it, you know, my friend was there to be like, no, you don't. And you're lying. And you know you're lying. And if you don't think that you're lying, I'm telling you that you're lying because you're lying. Okay. So that is part of my experiences, you know, in dealing with addiction, that I tell folks that it's real. Now, after saying all of that, because I know I told y'all people, this is very, very personal for me, but I want to make sure that we offer that not only that you hear my story and hear what John has to offer, but we also want to make sure that we talk about what is recovery, what does all that mean? How does one recover? Does one actually 100% recover from it? How do you recover? You know, I know for me, as you heard in the blog, the SARR.org, which is the Sex Anonymous, I forgot what the two R stands for, but then there's also sexualaddictionhelp.com. If you go to those two websites, or there is also known as Sexual Compulsives Anonymous, SCA, you can go there and you can find, yes, there are 12-step programs for this. I've been to one. I didn't get through all the steps because I found out that does not work for me. 12 steps don't work for me. I couldn't stand it. And the reason why I couldn't stand it is because I more so want, you know, the psychotherapy, I guess, the interactive kind of counseling and therapy sessions 12 steps, you know, taking a meeting, they helped to a degree. You know, I was able to be around folks who knew what I was talking about. Because when I said to them, you know, it was uncontrollable, you know, or because I'm online and watching internet porn for 19 hours without failing, hell, you know, put it on pause, go get something to eat to come back, you know, jacking off 5, 6, 12 times a day because I couldn't control myself. Someone else knew what I was talking about, you know. Even getting to the point where I jacked myself raw and still wanted to and learned how to maneuver around the rawness because I was into this particular place. You know, yes, I said that for those of you who are looking at the video and say, did he just say that? Yes, I did. for that, it was cute, but it wasn't because I like interaction. I like being able to come up with solutions. And the 12 steps didn't work for me. But I know a lot of folks that it helps through. You're able to go there and be amongst the brethren or the sisterin, because there were sisters in the class who were able to share their experiences. And when you feel that commonality, then you're able to know that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I think I got up to like step number 6 and then was able to move forward. And, of course, readdressed my face and had taken myself into other regions where I'm like, okay, no, this is not who I am. This here is not who I am, you know. So, John, I've been doing a lot of talking. Let's talk about the recovery aspect of it and the 12 steps. What give it to us from your experiences with helping clients and all of that.
Well, I think the 12 steps work for some people. However, what I see often is that a lot of people, they belong to 12 steps, whichever, you know, for whatever addiction, tend to then use the recovery process as the healing balm to fill in the void of the actual addiction itself. So I can't go throughout, you know, life without going to a meeting, you know, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you know. And to me, that creates a level of unhealthiness as well. So I say to some people that the recovery is about understanding, defining, and adopting for yourself a process or a mechanism that allows you to understand the difference between unhealthy and healthy actions and behaviors, and what to do so that you can lead your life as healthy as possible. Okay, that's why that whole falling off the wagon to me sometimes becomes even more destructive. Because people start to judge you and start to tell you that, oh, just because you've been in, say, in recovery for 12 years and you relapse, and all of a sudden those 12 years don't count, then you're day one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't subscribe to that. I really don't subscribe to that. In fact, and I think that is detrimental to tell me the 12 years that I was on the straight and narrow counted for something. Don't tell me it didn't count for nothing. But I do say this. I say that recovery is about finally understanding what's healthy for you and how you can live your life in a way that you actually find authentic joy. Now, again, I understand that sounds very biblical and spiritual and all that, but what brings you ultimate fantasy? What brings you ultimate happiness? What actually makes you smile? What gives you purpose for living? And once you start to invest time in those things, that's when you're able to give up some of the power that addiction has over you. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So maybe I like to watch internet porn, but the reality of it is that I still got to go to school, I still got to work, I still got to do this, I still got to do that, and I have to manage my time and my responsibilities in life. And I need to be able to make my life about more than just the fact that I watch a porn video to jack off, you know what I'm saying? Or the fact that I went to Peekaboo's to have that, you know, that touch because I don't have a boyfriend.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I don't have a boyfriend that takes care of my needs. And sometimes I might need to go out there and take care of it from one man to another. But that doesn't make me addictive, okay, that I am now at a point where I can see my patterns, like you said, those triggers. When you recognize your triggers, then you know that you're going down a path that's unhealthy for you. So once you start to recognize those things, then you're able to say, wait a minute, like you said earlier, for you, when you start eating too much chocolate, you know something is going on, then you need to put yourself on the list. Okay, you need to put yourself on the list. But the fact, but don't beat yourself up because you were just on your way home from work and the boy on the bus was looking at you all kinds of way, and that motherfucker looked good. So you what? You got all of a sudden to stop the heat. He got off, y'all talked, y'all went back, y'all knocked boots, y'all got your, you know, your nuts, and you went home.
You got your life, honey, okay.
You get back on square one. Fuck y'all, no. It was good, it was good. And you move on. Understand the difference in moderating yourself and making sure that you understand your trigger points are the best way to get into a healthy recovery for yourself. Number two is stop listening to society. Stop listening to what other people want to tell you about how you should run your life.
Oh, okay.
What you know is true is that you have to pay bills and you have to eat. And after all that, if you want to go to Peekaboo's and get your dick sucked and you're going to put on a condom and you ain't going to be talking all the mess, you're just going to go there, that's what you do. And that's okay. And then you come back home. Not you go over there and you stay for 6 hours and all of a sudden you're late for work and you try to make up an excuse because you don't know what you're going to tell your boss.
Right. Oh, been
you
there.
You know what I'm saying?
Been there. Been there, honey. Lord have mercy. Been and
I mean, I have this brand called that he's got a habit, which started when I started to do my research into sexual addiction, and I wrote this poem. It's too long to recite right now, but in it was the jinx of this guy who goes to Prospect Park in Brooklyn, and he starts to, he goes there. It was like 6 o'clock in the evening on a Friday, and then he goes in there, he starts, you know, the park is jumping, and he starts to have all the sex, and, you know, he goes here, he goes there. Next thing he knows, it's around 11 o'clock, so he said, you know what, let me get out of here, let me go to the club and see what boys I can catch at the club. And then he's walking out, and then he sees this these people having sex, and he says, let's try this before I go, and he gets caught up in that, and the next thing you know, gets caught up in another episode, and it's now 2 o'clock in the morning, and he's like, well, I can't go to the club, and I know everybody from the club is coming to the park, so let me see what's happening with the after-the-club crowd, you know, because, you know, the park and these places, they have shifts. You know, let's talk about the culture of these cruising places, so that the shift is going to change into the people are coming from the club. So now I'm sitting here and I'm going to wait around to this, you know, I see them and I have a couple of boys. My dick is limp. I can't get it hard because I've been busting too many nuts, and I don't want nobody to really fucking me anymore because I'm sore, you know. But I'm still looking around to see who's cute. I have all of them. All of a sudden, I look. The sun is up. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, I'm taking the first part. I'm taking the first person. And so now I'm walking out the club because I've done had it. I can't do this no more. I've done spent 12 hours in this bitch. And I need to get me something to eat because now I'm trying to walk and my knees are wobbling because I have no strength on them for standing up on them all day and night. And as I get to the exit, I see this one boy. Now, this ain't no other boy. This is that boy that I've been looking for a very long time, that I've been, you know, we've been exchanging eye contact and everything. I'm so in love with this boy. I will make him my own and leave this park for everything, just to be with that boy. And so I see him, and I follow him, and then he gets into that bush, and then I start to, you know, approach the bush, and then we get into it, and yes, I finally got him, you know. So I'm letting him ravage me and do everything that he needs to do to me, and then he wants me to fuck him, and I want to fuck that ass so bad. So I try, my dick won't get up.
Won't work. Shit.
So
been there. Go ahead.
So now he says, well, you know what? I'm good, though. I'm going to take a walk. And I see him take a walk and then get together with somebody else. And I wonder, what was it about me that he didn't like? Or he couldn't stay with me? What was it about me that didn't let him stay here?
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that I've been fucking so much that I didn't allow myself to be loved or to give out love.
Mm.
You know? And those
That's
are some of the things that we actually go through. That's some things that we actually go through in our addiction, is that we give too much power to something that holds us in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we understand how to be free about who we are, yes, I'm a beautiful person. The Creator created me as a beautiful, intelligent, healthy, wealthy man, they have a lot to offer somebody if they just want to take the risk. If I start to believe that about myself, okay, and I start to understand that, and this is something that you said, Demetrius, about that, just like people are judging me and they don't want me the way I want them, I'm also doing the same thing to somebody else. That
exactly.
Somebody in the midst that has met me has genuinely liked me and wanted more of me, but because I don't see them, I'm doing the same thing to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So
mm-hmm.
when we start to take that power back for ourselves and start to say that I am open to whatever God has for me, in whatever form he has it for me, as long as I can recognize that there is a gift from God, that's what I'm going to go after.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And instead of giving my power to something that continues to bring me down and to hold me a prisoner that I have no control over, once I start to let all that go, then I can safely say that I'm in a recovery process.
All right, now. And, you know, with you having said that, I could actually say that now. My move down here to Atlanta has taught me something about myself that I'm so thankful for, and kind of like kicked myself in the ass because one of my best friends have been telling me this for a long time, you know, and that is the whole art of platonic dating, you know. When I got here to Atlanta nearly 3 years ago, that there had become my creed, because I'm like, okay, let me reinvent myself, you know, because I came down here with a separate purpose. It wasn't to exercise my gay card or whatever. Hell, I've been doing that for the last 20 years, and it really didn't amount to anything for me, you know, outside of heartache and a lot of repercussions behind what the addiction had me caught up in. And then what I have let addiction to catch me up in, you know what I'm saying? Because it was very easy for me to have bad choices and blame it on the addiction. You know, particularly when I got into having discussions about my addiction and I was able to rationalize with folks or have other people rationalize with me, you know who you are, who I'm talking about, rationalize with me about what is my addiction and what isn't my addiction, you know. And it was very easy for me to sit up there and say, oh, yeah, well, okay, you know, well, you know I'm a sex addict, so, you know, and this, that, and the other. But it was about finding my own power base and actually my own self-worth. And that sounds so cliched. However, I had to really put, if I couldn't find it, then I had to tell myself what I was worth. I had to, if it meant putting a dollar amount on it, then I had to start there to say, okay, bitch, this ain't you. You know what I mean? And platonic dating without having any kind of expectations or any kind of whatever's on it. This is just a meet and greet. Let's vibe so we can see who the hell each other is. you know, outside of what the profile says on the damn website. You know, let's talk. You know, let's vibe. And, you know, I'm so thankful for that move because I've weeded out folks and folks done weeded me out because, hell, they lied. Most of them were looking for sex to begin with and didn't come right. You know, that could have still been an option. However, you didn't come right. So in saying that, I've been able to put myself into a better place of actually making a conscious decision to say, yes, I want to have sex with him, or no, I don't, because it's me talking and not feeling as if I'm doing it out of obligation, or, well, he did drive all this way over here to see me. You know, you know, I don't want to hurt his feelings and this, that, and the other. Oh, my God, I made a huge mistake doing that. For the very first time, I had someone come visit me from out of town. Baby, worst time in the world for this motherfucker to pop up. Okay? Worst time. I asked him to call me before he buys the fucking ticket, and he bought the ticket, then called me. And so because I was feeling bad because he was about to lose $400, I let him come anyway. You know, I had to work. It was just wrong all day. That was wrong as two left shoes on a right foot, and the bitch foot was cut off. Okay, that was wrong. It was wrong. It was wrong. It was so wrong. But you know what? Demetrius found the silver. In my mind, the lining was, bitch, I got somebody come and see me from out of town. Because my friends did it. That was addiction talking. Because I had never had that before. I never had anybody, you know, meet me online and say, okay, well, I'm coming into town just to come and see you. Bitch, what? You know what I'm saying? So that was a whole new kind of high for me. Whole new kind of high. Fucked up everything. Fucked up everything, I mean that just how I'm saying it. Everything was haywire. During that little weekend visit or whatever it was. In fact, we cut it short. I said, oh, hell to the no. And then after all that, didn't even get no sex from it. The motherfucker slept with a pillow between us. Wasn't that a clap of thunder? Okay. Right.
But, Demetrius, one thing that I have to go, and I want to leave this with some of the listeners, is that you said something that was very important, and I want to highlight it. It's finding your self-worth. And what I find often happens that that allows people to continue in their addiction and compulsive behaviors is that they buy into the notion that because they're cruising, because they're promiscuous, because they don't have, you know, 30 people in 1 month, because of whatever, that they are no longer worthy and that they are damaged goods. And that simply is not the truth.
Okay, damaged goods. How about that?
That God created you as a perfect being in His image, and that just like Jesus could be resurrected, so can you. So can all that is good and beautiful in your life. All you have to believe is to believe that you are worthy. You know, there was a point where I used to go to all these different places and, you know, to find my sex. And I believed that. But when I start to believe that I was a good person, that, you know what, I make people laugh and I make people happy when I'm around them, that, you know what, I like to do this and I like to do that outside of sex. You know what I'm saying? And that, you know what, if a man ever took me seriously, that something beautiful would be created. You know, that I know how to treat my man. I know that when he comes home, dinner's going to be on the stove. You know what I'm saying? And that the clothes are going to be. I know how to do all that. So I have some value to myself. I bring something great and beautiful to the table. So
okay.
I don't discount that just because of the fact that I might or might not be dealing with an addiction. okay?
Right.
Or that dark little secret, whatever that dark little secret is that you're guarding so much. Like I said, for me, it's about taking the risk. The risk to come into the room with armored in love, to be able to say that I am worthy and I am beautiful and I am valuable. And you either will see that and something beautiful will be created, or you won't see it and you're lost, baby, not mine.
Okay. 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 Hey, that there's enough said, sugar.
Well, I love you all, but I need to get off the phone.
Okay,
you know,
yes. Okay, yeah, go take your pain pills, child.
Yeah.
Okay.
And other things. I'll talk to you later. Oh. Love y'all. And thank you for
I'll call you in a minute. Go. Okay. Thank you, baby.
Bye.
Go ahead on to do what you got to do.
Care.
I'll talk to you in a little minute.
Right,
okay. Bye bye. All right. Yeah, he had to go early, children. We're down to like the last 9 minutes of the show, but he had dental surgery yesterday. And had like a multiple number of extractions. So for him to last this long, I thought he was gonna bail out on me at the end of the first hour. But yeah, thank you, John, for coming on in, and for giving us that standpoint of, as an outreach worker who deals with this on a consistent basis. As you can see, a lot of what he has to offer. You know, boy, it brings us back to the whole idea of, you know, having a kind of some kind of spiritual base. Actually, more so, it's just getting everything in order, your mind, body, and spirit. Because I don't think that recovery works if you're not focusing on all three areas. Because you have to have some kind of root in order to take care of it. And for a long time, I thought that I did, because I'm a church-going person, and, you know, we give it all over to the Lord and this, that, and the other. And even when I came out of traditional church or traditional teachings and went more into a liberated theology style of teaching, even in those areas, I still found myself battling with this because it was still around me. A lot of liberation theology teachings are very LGBT inclusive. So a lot of the cats that I was going to church with, honey, shit, we sitting up there hoeing together, you know, in the parks and at the places. So when I was able to go to my leaders, my spiritual leaders and spiritual advisors and things, and to actually sit down and get down and dirty, like I did today, then I was able to sit down and start putting some pieces together and start dealing with some of the real issues that was underneath the surface, a lot of which had to do with abandonment issues. You know, I have an attraction to older men, and, psychologists say that that's because since I didn't have my father in my life, you know, after the age of 8, that I was compensating for the lack of a father figure and all that kind of stuff. But however true or not true that may be, I was able to understand me. And part of which was I had to come into understanding my body, understanding that I am what I am. You know, what I don't like, I can change for those things that can be changed. And to know that if I don't change it and don't like it and I have the power to change it, then it's nobody's fault but mine. So I couldn't put that blame on anyone else. I couldn't throw that into anyone else's arena or look for anybody else to do it for me. And I think a lot of times we as gay people tend to want someone else to be the savior or the fixer, because for most of our lives we have been the person or the guru everybody runs to fix shit. You know what I mean? So that there is part of what addiction is, and I want to make sure that a lot of folks understand that SCA and SAA, Sexual Compulsives Anonymous, and Sexual Addicts Anonymous, are not just LGBT centered or whatever. They're open to any and everybody who feel as though this is a problem for them. As I said before, go to sexual addiction, sexualaddicthelp.com or SARR.net, or is it .org, to understand and to get some help, or even to get some of the information that they have. They have a test that they do that they render, and it's like 30 questions, and they say in the questionnaire that if you answer like yes to 20 of them or something, then you have to really look at yourself and say that this is possibly, or this is a possible problem for you. That can be managed, and actually you can actually get to a point where healthy sexual relationships are still a part of your future and can happen for you. Yes, that's www.sarr.org or www.sexaddictionhelp.com. That there will take you to other places and will allow you to get some help confidentially. Also will give you areas where you can find some of the 12-step groups or some meetings that you can get around folks who absolutely understands the struggle that one who is dealing with the addiction, and also help those who are caregivers or have been the objects or have been influenced or affected, that's the word, affected by those who have dealt, who have been around us, sexual compulsives or sexually addicted people. I encourage you to get that information, and I encourage you to share it with others and to actually build a discussion around it, because for too long we are we don't talk about these things, and they go unreported. It goes up under the rug. It's talked about as if it's buffoonery and foolishness, and we need to embrace this, people. This is part of the things that in African-American culture and people of persons of color culture that we have to look at. It may be down and ugly and dirty, but we have to look at it and actually put a cap on it or deal with it or something, so that we can put a face on it. You can't fight the enemy if you don't know what the enemy is. You have to call it out and look at it and say, okay, this is what it is, and then let's see what we can do about it. Okay? So that's my take on it. I'm down to the last 3 minutes of the show, so let me just thank everybody who has participated online in the tea room, to all of my tea people, 2ZNM, who says in here that she is the cousin to our guest today. She was in here doing her thing. Hey, Light Skin Bear, and Pharaoh's Treasure Box is over there in the chat room, and I have a number of guests who are in who have been listening to the show, and also Joe Bennett, who identified himself as a straight man, who says that, yes, this too goes on in straight world, but, you know, he didn't give us a lot of input, but he was like, yes, this is a really good topic to talk about. So thank you to all my tea sippers over there in the tea room. Let me give you highlights of next week's show. Next week, I'm very, very, very excited. First off, we're going to bring back April Summers. Remember my show where I had electrical problems and I was off the air for 22 minutes and carrying on, and she was on the show? Well, darling, I got her coming back. The most notable, I call her the official, Patti LaBelle impersonator lookalike, Miss April Summers, will be joining us again next week for the first hour. And the second hour, Dishing Tea with Big Meats, has just gone international because, my darling, R&B's best-kept secret, Miss Selena Johnson, will be calling in from Italy where she's vacationing. And for the second half of the show, that 2 to 3 o'clock hour, she's going to be with us, and we're going to dish tea with her, talk about her new album, Chapter 4, Labor Pains, and get into all of her her upcoming show performances, what it is to be a record owner now because she has her own label, and we're going to get all off into that. So I have Selena Johnson coming up, and I'm very, very, very excited for that. October 28th, I'm going to have to cancel that show again because of job regulations and more training. So we won't be on October 28th. However, that next week, November 4th, this man has just blown up the gospel community with all kinds of controversy, and that is Mr. Tony will be here to dish his tea with us, honey. So I'm very ecstatic about it, and I want to make sure that you guys are all there. I have some information, and I meant to say this earlier in the show. My mother's church, I wanted to do this before we got all off into talking all nasty and carrying on. But my mother's church is providing some information. I'll bring all that on next week because I want to make sure the Detroit area is in on it for all the empowerment building that they're bringing about. So I'll have that for you next week as well. So good night and thank you. For those of you who are still online, this here would be the after show portion for the next couple of seconds because y'all know once I got a two-hour show, so after so long, y'all going to end up getting cut off. So rather than have them cut you off, let me say my thank yous to you, and I'm going to bid you an adieu today, and I hope to hear and see you guys next week. So wonderful show, people. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for dishing tea with me. Goodbye.